Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. It is a beautiful summer afternoon here in Atlanta in 2019, in the midst of what many economists call the gig economy. We're going somewhere with this, I promise. My name is Ben.
You would not believe your eyes. 8 million fireflies. So some, you know that song?
It sounds just like the Postal Service, but it's a band called Owl City.
Are they on wherever that record label was in the Midwest?
Saddle Creek?
Saddle Creek, yeah, that's what I'm trying to think.
No.
Of. Okay.
I don't think so.
Just felt like they would be.
Well, no, they literally are like a one-to-one ripoff of the Postal Service, but they have this song called Fireflies that was very popular in grocery stores across the country.
Wait, who are you?
I'm Noel.
Oh, great. Good. You're in the right place.
Our resident music snarker.
Who was responsible for those lovely dulcet tones we heard just a second ago? Why, that was super producer Casey Pegram. And you may be asking yourself, gig economy, fireflies, are you guys finally doing that weird experiment where you both do one half of a completely different show? The answer is no, though that would be fun.
Yeah. Have we discussed this?
In my head, we have.
I love it.
we also discussed the Nixon episode. Whatever happened to that?
I think it's just sort of a terrible idea.
You thought it was a great idea at first.
I think it would wear thin very quickly.
Yeah, it would have to be like a 12 to 15 minute episode.
No, I think it would wear thin after about 3 minutes.
Really?
For me personally.
Oh, okay. Like as you experience it.
As I experience it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it's not about us. It's about the audience.
That's true.
You guys listening.
Let us know. How do you really feel about an all Nixon impression episode? And how do you feel about fireflies? What'd you call them? Fireflies? Lightning bugs?
Torch bugs?
Yeah. Little glowy boys?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I call them.
Bright butts?
Mm-hmm.
Flashlight locust? I'm just making things up here. Strobe skeeters.
These are all very good, Ben.
Thanks, Noel. Thanks. So fireflies are actually beetles, which I think would surprise a lot of people, and they are the subject of today's episode. I think anybody who's grown up around these amazing creatures has at least a few nostalgic memories of seeing them come out, you know, as the sun is westering and the night begins. You can start to see them pop up,
mm-hmm.
and you can, because they're very easy to catch,
yeah.
you can get one in a jar,
yeah,
you can hold it in your hand.
You know, squish them mm-hmm. and take that bioluminescent juice that drips forth from their tiny broken bodies and, you know, rub it on your hands or your face mm-hmm. like some sort of weird feral jungle child.
Mm-hmm. Or a future makeup artist.
Yeah, exactly. You know, not necessarily a nice thing to do. Much nicer to just like hold them and look at the cupped hand and then release them. But, you know, we all knew those kids that would give them a good squish. And it turns out in 1960 through the mid-90s, there were a lot of firefly squishers in the Midwest, round about Missouri.
Yes, due to something called the Sigma Firefly Scientist Club, tens of millions of fireflies were caught in areas across 25 states and shipped into containers, not just to have some guy to collect them all Pokemon-esque thing, but because there was a big business about. Let's talk real quickly about what the, let's call it the lantern, right? What makes fireflies glow? It's an enzyme called luciferase, and under the right conditions, this stuff produces that, as you described it, no, bioluminescent gleam. And for this gleam to occur, the bug has to use a kind of energy called ATP. So if the bug's butt is a lamp, then ATP would be the fuel, and the enzyme would be like the match or the lighter that lights it. Scientists figured out how this all worked in the late 1940s, and pretty soon after that, biochemists said, how can we apply this amazing substance? Does this have industrial applications? And that's where Sigma comes into play.
Yeah, and Sigma, for our purposes today, are sort of like the man, you know, the man that wants to squash these beautiful creatures on a mass scale because they just need that sweet, sweet enzyme, you know, because they actually had developed an entire kind of slate of chemicals that were able to use this bioluminescent stuff to light things up, right? And here's the thing. Sigma, for our purposes today, they're sort of like the big bad of this story. I mean, they didn't necessarily weren't all bad, but they were definitely the enemy of fireflies everywhere because they figured out that that enzyme could actually be used to detect bacteria in environments that were meant to be sterile. So it was something that really came in handy and was valuable to make sure there was no contamination in labs, for example, right?
Yeah. Additionally, these chemicals can detect contamination in milk and water, and they can determine how much cancer is in a tissue. This next one reminds me of the old school Adam West Batman, because people even attempted to use it as a shark repellent. And according to Sue Hardwick, a supervisor at Sigma, it was once sent into outer space as a way to test for extraterrestrial life. We're getting a lot of this information from an author named Sarah Lewis, who is a firefly expert at Tufts University. She wrote a book called Silent Sparks, The Wondrous World of Fireflies. I love the title, and the story is worth an entire book here because, as we said, Sigma realizes there's tremendous potential in capturing all these bright butts, right? And their problem is that you only get a little bit of this enzyme per bug.
Sure.
And you have to gather a massive amount of them. When we say earlier, tens of millions. And so they said, how can we collect these? We can't necessarily get all the fireflies together in one place. So we have to enlist the help of people who are around fireflies when they occur.
They literally needed to establish a supply chain, and they did so in the form of, I don't know, it's some really clever marketing, that's for sure. I would almost argue they are tricking kids into doing this, but they formed this thing that we talked about at the top of the show, which was the Sigma Firefly Scientists Club. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that sound fun and nerdy?
Sounds like a good, healthy summer for a growing tyke. And here's what they did. They started publishing advertisements and then articles that were really just longer advertisements disguised as news in local papers all across the Midwestern United States. These would be classified ads with all cap lines like, catch lightning bugs, and then, hey, kids, join the Sigma Firefly Scientist Club. It's fun, it's profitable, and an opportunity to make a valuable contribution to science. And so they say, you know, we're appealing to youngsters throughout St. Louis, for example, and you get 30 cents in cash for every 100 bugs you catch, or $1 in ride tickets at three local amusement parks.
It's genius. And I maybe mischaracterized it earlier in the show saying they were tricking the kids, but it was definitely a way of getting pretty cheap labor, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
30 cents per 100. I mean, that's, I don't know. What is it? Is that like good money for kids? Like, I don't know.
I think definitely the company is saving a lot in their supply chain, right? Because it's not like they're only making 35 cents in cash. Thinking, how are we going to keep this operation afloat? They did, however, form a pretty effective community. People were writing into Boys Life, the Boy Scout magazine, about how this was a great way to have fun, get outdoors, and make money. Adults approved of it because they said, you know, these kids are getting exercise, they're having fun, they're learning the value of hard work. And Sigma kept all these kids that were collecting fireflies for them in the loop. They would send out news. You know, you would get these collection kits, but then you would also get information on what Sigma was doing with what they were catching. You know what I mean? So it wasn't a black box. You weren't just sending fireflies off into the void and getting a dollar's worth of rides at an amusement park.
Yeah, but they also, like, they really built a culture around this. They had all kinds of swag, like T-shirts and the special catching nets or whatever. They had buttons. And, of course, you got that kind of candy money, I guess you could call it. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely thrived. Eventually, it had thousands of members. And it wasn't just in the Midwest. It was across 25 different states. And actually, we don't really have exact data on, you know, where they were dispersed. But what we do know is that the club members brought in over 3 million fireflies each year. And this really was quite a massive operation that was pretty loosely run at first. It was, right?
Yeah, for a while. And then they said, okay, this is sustainable. This is growing into a national phenomenon now. We need to invest a little in our communities. So that is why, by the middle of the 1970s, club members could pay a small deposit, and then they would get their official firefly hunting kit. The firefly hunting kit was pretty neat. It's the kind of thing that I would be into as a kid, and probably a lot of us listening would be as well. You would get a pamphlet telling you what a firefly is, what you're supposed to do, how you catch them, custom shipping canisters that were lined with desiccant, a net that, get this, had some branding. It was silk screened with the official insignia of the Sigma Club. It was a bug with a bow tie and white gloves. And then they also got buttons with a little glow-in-the-dark paint where the firefly's butt would be.
Do you think it was made of firefly guts? They probably had to use all that stuff just for the cancer research. They didn't want to waste any of it on buttons.
That's an interesting question.
That would have been foolish.
And, of course, although I'm having a great time saying the word butt repeatedly on the air, we should point out that the firefly's light-emitting organs are, in most cases, they're on the lower abdomen.
Yeah, right.
So they're around where, like, your lower abs, dirty V would be. Can I say dirty V on the air?
I don't know what that is. Is that like a happy trail?
It's kind of. It's happy trail adjacent. It's where, like, Casey, you know what I'm talking about.
I mean, I do, but I've never heard the term before.
No, nor have I.
Yeah. Maybe I accidentally made it up.
It's possible.
Casey on the case.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details. Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
They also had some pretty clear standards about how they preferred the Fireflies to be shipped. They said, look, we'll take them dead or alive, but we prefer them refrigerated and sent to us within 5 days of capture because the chemicals that we're after are more active if we get them alive.
And these kids were, cutthroat in the way that they competed with one another. Sure, this was kind of just like a fun thing to do, like as a hobby or whatever, but it, for some people, it was serious business, right? And Sigma actually had a sliding scale system. So you would actually get paid proportionately more as, you know, you sent them bigger loads. So you would start at 50 cents for 100 flies. I think we said 30 earlier. It was somewhere between 30 and 50 cents. But once you reached 20,000, you were up to 1 cent per bug. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there were these like almost factions that would emerge where entire towns or groups of kids would pool all of their resources to maximize. Right. The Allison Firefly Club in Iowa actually brought in 1 million fireflies over the course of 5 years. And they used that money to build a pool for their community,
which is great.
That's awesome.
And there were other things that we could kind of describe as firefly mafias. Still in Iowa, in Vinton, Iowa, there was a kingpin and a queenpin of the firefly game. One kid, it was not identified. He was 10 or 11 years old. He said, instead of going straight to Sigma as a single operator, I'm going to rent a ton of firefly nets. I'm going to hire a bunch of kids who work for me at a lower rate, and I'll take their bugs and I'll give them to Sigma. And he was making about a penny a piece, according to experts. But remember, I said there were two Dons. Vinton was home to another quite successful young entrepreneur, Judy Wood, also known as the Lightning Bug Lady.
Such a cool nickname. So the Lightning Bug Lady, she spent an entire school year by her teacher's side, and she used her free summers and this network of kids that she was kind of controlling and turned it into this like bug kind of like industry, I guess you could say. She had over 400 kids that brought her their spoils every night from like as far as 45 miles away. I mean, this is like a serious operation. She's almost like the Marm Mandelbaum, which we did an episode on Stuff That I Want You to Know recently, the first mob boss of New York who acted as like a fence. But this is exclusively one product, and it's absolutely fence. I mean, it's not illegal, but she's like this kind of go-between with all of these folks that are going out and doing the actual work.
Yeah. So when Judy Wood wrote to the Chicago Tribune, she said that she was bringing in about 35,000 fireflies to St. Louis every other day. And she did this every summer for over 25 years. Her Firefly money put her kids through college.
Jeez, that is commitment right there. That is a real racket. I love it. You got to respect that entrepreneurial spirit. It's true. 25 years, enough to put her kids through college. So we have folks improving their local communities, mm-hmm. building pools, fun stuff. We have someone actually putting their kids through college. But here's the thing. It wasn't so good for everyone in this equation. And by that, I'm referring to the Fireflies themselves. So this is a Firefly expert from Tufts University, Sarah Lewis, calculated that the Sigma Firefly Scientist Club probably killed in the neighborhood of 100 million fireflies during its time. And firefly population data, according to Lewis, is pretty sparse. And, you know, little kids with nets probably isn't their biggest predator. I mean, they've got other problems to deal with. But Lewis says 100 million fireflies is nothing to sneeze at. Mm-hmm. And it's really, in her estimation, kind of the principle of it, right?
Yeah, it's sort of the tragedy of the commons, or at least tangentially related to that concept. If we consider these fireflies and the beauty they provide the world a shared natural resource, then according to Lewis, it should be for everyone. And it doesn't make sense to her that people would go out and harvest vast numbers of this, you know, especially for personal gain. And as you said, look, these insects are facing a ton of other issues, habitat loss, light pollution, pesticides everywhere. But despite the misgivings of some folks who did have a problem with this, the industry was booming until the 1990s. And here's a bit of a mystery. We don't know why, but the Sigma Firefly Scientists Club closed down, there in the 90s for undisclosed reasons. And people guessed at a couple of different things. They said, well, maybe the world is more environmentally minded, or the U.S. is. Maybe child wages are too inflated for this to be profitable. Maybe the patent on synthetic luciferase expired, right? A company named Amgen had control of that patent for a long time. The company responsible for the firefly harvesting craze is now known as Sigma Aldrich, and they're valued at $17 billion.
Woof. That's a lot of dollars. Yeah, a company built on the backs of...
On the butts.
Yeah, that's good, man. Built on the butts of our little glowy boys. And thankfully, they came up with a synthetic version of this stuff, so they didn't have to keep doing that anymore, right?
Right, well, the patent on it expired, so they didn't have to collect the natural stuff. But still, that's speculation. There is a synthetic, mm-hmm. you're right, there is a synthetic version of this. You can still, however, buy a whole jar of fireflies from Sigma, pulled from the huge amount of fireflies they caught over the decades.
Really?
Mm-hmm. You can write to them today and buy a jar of fireflies.
How much will that set you back?
Let's see. Oh, let me correct that. I was looking for fireflies whole desiccated. That product has been discontinued. So until recently, you could buy a whole jar of fireflies. However, you can buy firefly lantern extract. It's the powder. It's just a powdered version of the glowing chemical, and it will set you back $224 U.S., which seems kind of expensive, but I am not, I'm not an expert in that market. You know what I mean?
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I think that kind of sews up the story part of this. It was sort of a happy ending for the creatures. It didn't decimate their entire population. You can still go out on a twilight night in the woods and see little glowy boys sparkling everywhere like tiny, tiny fairies. But Ben, we haven't answered the most important question in all of this.
What's that?
Is there a difference between a firefly and a lightning bug? Those are the two, you know, we added some other names in the mix there, but these two are the ones that have always stuck for me. Are they just regional names for the same thing, or are there scientific differences?
Yeah, I was wondering about that too, Noel. To rephrase the question, it's sort of like, are lightning bugs a distinct species or a distinctly different thing from a firefly? Or is it more like the way people in different parts of the country describe soda, right? Is it a pop? Is it a Coke? Is it I don't know what the other slang names for soda are. But there are over 2,000 species of fireflies that we know of. And according to Bert Vox, University of Cambridge linguistics professor, the answer is probably something more along the lines of regional terms. Most people in the U.S. use both terms interchangeably, firefly and lightning bug. So 39.8% of us in the United States will use both of them. 30.4% say firefly exclusively, and 29.1% say lightning bug exclusively. And I'm wondering if that's Southern. Lightning bug feels like a Southern thing to me. Here's one. This is the weirdest one. In this study, again, 10,000 people, 0.02% or two people total in the study called these bioluminescent bugs Peeny Wally. It's a new one to me.
Did they know each other?
Was it the same guy?
That's very strange. Nobody called them little glowy boys?
No. Glowy boy and bright butt. Those are things that I think we discovered today.
That's unfortunate.
It could be a great t-shirt.
I think it could. Well, I guess that...
No. We got soft.
It's time, gentlemen.
Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. the Quizster.
Hey, what's up?
You got a lot of nerve coming here, mister.
Yeah. I mean, you had plenty of advance warning today.
It's true. We did hang out and talk about this earlier.
We were on base camp. We were talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know. You also totally tipped your hand on the message board.
I did. Yeah, no. I didn't tell anybody what I was going to talk about, what
You're such
the topics
a lurker.
Were going to be.
I thought it was great. We got to do a little old school shout out to our company's continuing deep-seated beef with Wikipedia.
Yes, the ongoing rivalry. No, there's no rivalry there. It's just we aren't allowed to. We were never allowed to use it as a source.
Oh, but the times they are changing.
Now back to my nemesis.
Yeah.
Personality.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm against you guys.
Yeah, you're speaking of rivals. There.
Yeah.
You are not here today to give any of us a gift necessarily or to wish us happy birthday or pay a social call. You're not here to borrow a cup of sugar. No. You're up to your old tricks again.
I am up to my old tricks. We are going to have another attempt to see if you guys can determine whether or not the scenario I present to you is real or if I made it upsies. As is always the case, for those of you who are not familiar, yes, this is the most cringeworthy segment in all of podcasting, where I come in and I present our beloved hosts a scenario. They have to figure out if it is a true thing or a fake thing. They get 3 minutes to do it, and they also can ask me a question if they follow an arbitrary rule of my choosing. And so I'm going to read out the scenario for you. I will give you the rule, and then we will start the clock. So here's the scenario. Now, first, the following is absolutely true, 100%. I'm establishing a prologue. This is something I never, ever do. So
this is new.
Be grateful for it, is what I'm saying.
I like what you're doing here.
In 1874, the Great Plains, the United States, was devastated by a plague of grasshoppers, or more accurately, the Rocky Mountain locust. There were literally trillions of the bugs, and they ate pretty much everything except peas. There were stories of them eating wool off of sheep in the fields or the clothes off farmers' backs. All of that is true, but is this part true? Different communities tried battling these things in various ways. They put together hopper dozers, which were essentially plows that would scoop up locusts by the thousands. They would set fires to try and discourage the bugs, which the locusts would simply extinguish by landing on the burning heaps and smothering the fire. One way communities tried to deal with it, locusts, was to offer bounties for dead grasshoppers. For example, in Nicolet County, Minnesota, the county government offered $1 for every bushel of locusts brought in. The final total came in at $25,053, and it didn't even put a dent in the problem. On top of that, John S. Pillsbury, governor of Minnesota at the time, passed laws stating that every able-bodied man would have to spend 1 day a week for 5 weeks destroying grasshopper eggs. Now, if you want to ask a question, you must precede it with the phrase, "What's the buzz? Tell me what's a-happening."
Okay, hang on. I have to run to the clock. Oh, man. One day this clock is going to be worth it. Okay. And begin! Hey, hey, what's the buzz? What's a-happening?
Should you want to know? No, go ahead. Tell me. What's your
question? Okay. So the part that is established as true is the fact that there was
a locust plague in 1874 in the Great Plains.
Plague of locusts mm-hmm. in the Great Plains. And what we're attempting to determine the veracity of is whether or not the methods of trying to attack these locusts are true.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
Buzz, what's a-happening?
Close enough. No, yeah, okay. Yes.
Was this area of the country known for sinfulness?
I mean, it's the Great Plains. It's a flyover state. So I never pay attention to them.
Oh, wow.
That's a hot take that's from the quizster.
Hot take?
No. But for serious, I have no clue.
Yeah, I mean,
it's 1874.
It's a plague of locusts. I just kind of made me figure they had it coming, yeah, biblically speaking.
To be fair, I mean, the whole nation in 1874 was sort of in a kind of healing pattern.
That's true. That's a good point.
Hey, what's the buzz? What's a-happening?
Yes. Not big Andrew Lloyd Webber fans here in the...
No, what is this from?
It's from Jesus Christ Superstar. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what's the buzz? What's a-happening? Is this a scenario wherein most of this could be true, but one thing could be untrue and sink us? I'm asking because...
I'm not doing something where, out of all the stuff I told you, one little thing has been changed.
I think what's in question here is whether or not the bounty existed and, you know, the response to the locusts.
And I was wondering how much the bounty was.
Like, it's either all true or it's... All I made it all up.
Okay, because I didn't want us to get pinged on something where it's like, ha 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 ha. You make it too easy.
It was $1.17.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's what I'm thinking.
You know, Ben?
I'm going true.
I'm going big time true on this one.
All right, well, lock it in.
Lock it in.
3, 2, 1. True. Oh,
curses!
We finally bested you. Whoa.
Casey, can we get some celebratory music?
Yeah, it's been a hot minute. We were reaching out to the internet to see if someone was keeping track, maybe, because we certainly aren't. But I'm pretty sure we are miles behind.
Yeah. You managed to make up a little bit of territory here. Well, let me give you a little bit more insight into this, because it is fascinating. So, yes, there was a grasshopper plague, a locust plague in 1874. Yes, people made hopper dozers, which were essentially these plows that had been adjusted to collect locusts in various ways. People did issue bounties for bushels of dead grasshoppers. Mm-hmm. A bushel, by the way, in case you're curious, is about equivalent to 9.2 gallons. So one bushel of dead grasshoppers is about 10 gallons of dead grasshoppers.
Wow.
And so you get a dollar for that. And I also adjusted for inflation, just for the heck of it. That's about $22.50 per bushel.
Hey, nice. Up top. Yeah. I'm high-fiving.
And it also means that that the entire payout from that one county in Minnesota was slightly more than $500,000 total just for bushels of dead grasshoppers. There were multiple places that would issue these sort of bounties. Uh-huh. Missouri had a dollar a bushel bounty that started in March of 1875, I believe, and then it went down to 50 cents the next month, then it went down to 25 cents the next month, then it went down to 10 cents next month. So diminishing returns for your dead grasshoppers.
I'd like to point out something for the listening audience. The Quister is wearing his own t-shirt.
I am.
He's like one of those guys in the band.
I'm representing
the
myself.
Band shirt.
Yes.
Which you know what? I still really like that t-shirt. And to be fair, you did say that you were going to wear that for anybody on Ridiculous Historians.
He's really doing it. He's really doing it.
Yeah, I committed. Interestingly, John S. Pillsbury, the governor of Minnesota, was also co-founder of the Pillsbury Company.
Oh.
It's named after his nephew, Charles Alfred Pillsbury. So the two of them were the co-founders of the company.
Where's the Doughboy thing come from?
I mean, it was whenever you pushed John Pillsbury's tummy, he went, hee-hee. And then locusts would fly out of his mouth and swallow you whole.
No, this guy sounds like a good time.
That
like,
might have been a lie, that part. Also, interesting fact.
Yes.
Something that's truly – the stories of these locusts is something that will make your blood just chill in your veins. They talk about the sun going dark because of clouds of these things, and that they literally were eating the clothes off of people's backs as they were trying to get inside.
They ruined the economy too, right?
$200 million worth of damage in the Great Plains states. There was actually a Missourian scientist who recommended eating them, and a lot of people said, ew, gross, and they didn't. But it probably wouldn't have mattered anyway. You never could have eaten as many as were out there. Mm-hmm. Interesting fact, though. Despite the fact that there were trillions of these things devastating the middle of the United States, today they're extinct.
Wow.
And there's not really a good scientific explanation for exactly what happened. There are a lot of hypotheses, but we don't actually know what led to them going to extinct.
I mean, did they serve a purpose other than just decimating crops? And
I mean,
like,
do humans serve a purpose apart from flying over the Great Plains states?
We make all sorts of snacks.
It's true. It's
also true. Yes.
We all also are the only creatures that seem to hold abstract, at times contradictory belief systems.
Oh, no. Have you ever talked about it to a grasshopper about like any like really deep philosophical question? Because they will waffle all over.
But it always goes back to grass, though, with them. That's the thing.
The problem is that they constantly jump to conclusions.
Oh. Also, I feel like hopper dozer is a cool fake anachronistic insult.
I dig it.
I when I came across that line, I said, did I write this?
You old hopper dozer.
Is this me that wrote this thing? No, it was but it is interesting that this was a problem that was devastating the United States. There were real efforts to send disaster relief to those states from other parts of the U.S. because there were entire economies that were completely devastated.
It sounds like literal hell on earth.
Being
swarmed and like having your clothes eaten off of your body.
Yes, and they're eating the wool off of sheep in the fields.
Yeah.
And they said that you could actually hear them chewing. And that it could reduce acres of corn in just 3 hours.
Which
to nothing. Chew it all the way down to the ground.
The most insane part to me is this mysterious extinction. You know, it makes you think this country, I don't want to sound like a performative environmentalist or something, but that's the most chilling part. the fact that this entire life form disappeared, like the passenger pigeons that also used to blot out the sky, right?
Yes, yes. Yes, they would also peck the clothes off of people's backs when they were trying to run into the farmhouses.
I can hear the pecks in the distance. The other thing, because you could probably hear the swarm coming.
Oh, yes. No, they said that it sounded like a really terrible storm because they were just hitting against walls and rooftops. And yes, apparently the Rocky Mountains area where the grasshoppers, when they're individuals, they're grasshoppers. It's only when they're in mass that you call them locusts, which is also kind of interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. So they apparently had a very good year for all the eggs survived, more eggs survived than normal, but there was a food shortage in their native habitats. So then they migrated down from the Rocky Mountain area across the Great Plains. And it was from the Dakotas down through Texas that was just absolutely affected by this. Kansas was really hit hard. Missouri was hit hard.
Today I learned something. I had no idea that a grasshopper by itself is a grasshopper. A grasshopper en masse is a locust. People don't have anything that cool yet.
No, where you got like one doofus is just a doofus and a whole bunch of doofuses is Congress.
Okay, there we go. There we go. We got the button. We got there. Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister, thank you so much for coming on to the show. It's been too long. You know, we had people in the audience who were asking us, they were asking us where the heck you were at. And then we read, you actually showed up in some of the reviews that we foolishly read on our listener mail episode.
Sorry about that, guys.
It's true.
No, we took it.
How bad was it? Like, boy, when the Quister comes on, I just have to hit stop.
They didn't even name you by name. They just referred to some annoying component of the show.
I mean, and, that's fair.
We knew which one it was.
I knew it when I pitched it.
Well, we were pretty sure that we were the annoying components of the show.
No. It was very specifically other than us. We were also identified as annoying components.
Yes.
But it was a third component.
I am somewhat consoled by the fact that at least one person said they think that the Quister should start showing up on other shows too. But I have a feeling.
I like the in-universe tie-in. Oof. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about this offline. Let's
Sounds
see if
good.
We can figure out a way to have you appear and like crash someone else's podcast. We have to figure out someone who'd be a good sport about it. Let us know what podcast you think the Quister should crash next. You can tell us at Facebook. You can let us know on Instagram. You can let us know on Twitter. We highly recommend our Facebook page, Ridiculous Historians, where you can meet our favorite part of the show, your fellow listeners. Also, let us know if you have ever been in the firefly catching business. Just interested. I would say let us know if you lived through that locust swarm in the locust plague in the 1800s. But if you have lived that long, I think you probably won't confess it, just honestly.
So thanks, as always, to the part of the show we all love to hate, but mostly just love to love, Jonathan Strickland, the notorious Quister. I got to give you props for finding such a similar story to the story that we talked about today. That was very well done.
I really wanted to do that. You know, the original story I picked was one that you guys have already covered in a previous episode
what
of
was
Ridiculous
it?
History. It was using fleas as weapons in World War II, but then you guys did a full episode on that.
Yeah, we did. We also did another episode about a similar situation where school kids were encouraged to shoot squirrels and send their severed tails to the governor's office, almost like cereal box tops.
Golly, I'm going to have to listen to that show.
Yeah, it's a good one. So thanks, as always, to our super producer, Casey Pegram, Alex Williams, who composed our theme, research associates Gabe Lugier and Ryan Barish.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thanks, of course, as well, to Eves Jeffcoat and Christopher Hasiotis, friends of the show and friends of ours. Thank you for tuning in. And thanks to all the bright butts, all the glowy boys out there. And Noel, thank you to you for yet another wonderful, whimsical, ridiculous journey through history.
And you as well, sir. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.